A passenger on a Swansea bus in Wales idly passed his hand beneath his seat and clutched another hand. The startled passenger called the conductor, who in turn called police. The police called the Royal Institute of Wales. The passenger had found their 2,500-year-old mummified hand, which was stolen a month ago. Yes. You must try my passion steak. It will keep you forever young, my dear. Thousands of years after you're gone, your skin will be smooth and lovely to touch. Your jawline will be firm. The crow's feet will be almost indiscernible. My Farschenstieg comes in 7 fascinating flavors and colors. All of them refillable at your nearest drugstore or cosmetician. Hey, George, you're looking good. Never would have believed it after all this time. Yes, why don't you sing a song of sixpence? A pocket full of rye. Old Overholt. Story is not a man finding a 2,500-year-old mummified hand, but a man stealing a 2,500-year-old mummified hand. And there you have the pinpoint upon which, indeed, the head of a pin upon which a thousand or more angels have danced. 10,000, 10 million. Please. Emotionality will get you nowhere here. We're here to help you, you know. Yes. We're here to speak to you of things that are familiar and reliable. Yes, here at Beneficial, you're the boss. You just name it. We'll give it. On your signature only. It's because we like you. We want to help you. We wish to ease that rocky pathway of existence. Oh, by the way, down the road there's a field of poppies. Hurry through it. You know what happened to the Cowardly Lion. What a rotten mess that was. Of course, he was always a fool. Cowards are always fools. Idiots, knaves. I can tell you're not a coward. Or you wouldn't be here at Beneficial. You're facing up to your problems. Go ahead, sing. We here make no value judgments. That's fine. Now you're beginning to clear it up. That's get it out. Get it out, old man. Go ahead. That's right. More, more. Yes, stronger wine. Bring on more girls. Go ahead. Oh, come now, come now. Stand up. I hate to see a client on his knees. Now get up. What would your mother think? Please. That's better. That's better. Now pull your stomach in. You notice how those old, unused muscles knot and pull and tug? Yeah, now you're beginning to stand. That looks good. Square your shoulders, man. Now put your signature right here. Like a man. The man that you are. No, that's just the Muzak. Don't worry about that. Yes, I understand. Go ahead now. Here, I'll hold your wrist while you write. I know it always blots, but... There, hold it steady there. There. Now cross the T. Very good. That was nice. Now dot the I. No, just once. There you go. That's better. I'll take care of the rest of them. I mean, if you always sign that way, it's all right. I don't mind six I's. There we go. Now, there, now. Bring the line there. Now let me blot it. There, you're all done. Now, don't you feel better? See? It was simpler than you thought. No. It's all right. You don't... Please, not here. You don't... You do not... stand up now. You don't have... Please, this is very embarrassing. What will my secretary think? There you are. Now, please, let go of me. There. It's easy now. Now, stop. There, old man. I'm just here to help you. You do not have to kiss me. That's all right. Okay, there. Now, you call at the window down at the end of the corridor, and they'll give you your money. And we trust it'll be beneficial. Use it well and in good health. And drop by any time. I would suggest the 15th and the 30th of every month. Or we'll drop by. Oh, yes, it's all right. Close the door behind you. Good scout. Yes, it is said that all things come to all men if they wait long enough. And I'm not against waiting, per se. But here it is Thursday. And it'll be Thursday again and again and again and again and again and again and again. And again. Of course, we like to use the English pronunciation occasionally again, merely to keep things in perspective, as we say here at the office. And again and again and again, it'll be Thursday. Day on, day out. Year on, year out. It's like this one time, you know. Oh, I can say that there are probably three things, or four, or maybe 1,000 things, that are the delicious things to do. That are rarely recognized as delicious things to do. For example, I dig opening packages. I don't open enough packages, you know? I mean, I like to open packages that have little things around the top that you grab and you zip them out. Open. I like a package that fights. Really? Do you know that some packages have inbuilt tension? That, for example, the cigarette packages, you know as well as I do, that people smoke cigarettes not because of that delicious spring-like flavor of the commercial, or that feeling of well-being, that feeling of youth and the delightful vigor that comes from paddling a canoe over a limpid green lake with a limpid green girl. That's not why people smoke cigarettes. It's because they're shaky. Hey, by the way, wouldn't that be a great cigarette commercial if somebody said the truth? If you're shaky and itchy and scratchy, Oh, he suggests you try. It'll make you feel better right away for at least 30 seconds, and then you can start all over again and again and again, and it'll be Thursday again. And nothing will have been settled. And so part of the cigarette is the fight that the package gives you. It gives you something to work on. Holds those little hot hands in abeyance for a while. You know what is it they said about the hands that are idle? Ha ha, yes, indeedy. Mo. Excuse the French. But some words you have to use that are indeedy mo. It says it. And so the idle hands must needs be fined tools to play with. And yet, oh, by the way, what do you think of the 5-hour week? Do you have any feelings about it? Mr. Castrati? Huh? We'd be willing to talk it over here for a moment or two. And what do you think of the atom bomb? Do you think it should be banned? And do you feel that peppermint-flavored yogurt would be a good product? Just fill it in. We'd like to know. Oh, of course, we assume you know, or at least you feel. You do, don't you? Yes. Speaking of 2,500-year-old mummified hands, this is WOR, AM and FM, New Yorkie.
Today and tomorrow, it's Alcoa, Alcoa, the name that means aluminum.
Be a carefree family this summer with a new chain-link fence of Alcoa aluminum. Imagine the peace of mind that comes from knowing where your children are all the time. And watch your flowers, shrubs, and young trees flourish when an aluminum fence goes up. They're protected, too. And remember, aluminum fencing just naturally stays bright and beautiful. No red rust, no painting, no tiresome maintenance ever. Protect your property and your family with a new chain-link fence made of Alcoa aluminum.
Yes, friends.
And tomorrow.
Live a carefree life. Be happy. Buy an Alcoa aluminum fence. Surround your life. And keep them out. You'll be carefree. You can get them at Corvette's Shop at Home service. For details and low prices, call Murray Hill 70700. That's Murray Hill 70700. Out of town, call collect. Ho 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 ho. Ho 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 ho.
Hold it there.
Oh, it's Alcoa, Alcoa. Alcoa is aluminum.
Ba-ba. Oh, boy, we moved that aluminum. You know, you just can't help it. Like about 2.5 hours ago, you sometimes you see scenes that are unbelievably like a scene out of a cartoon. I'm walking along 42nd Street in the dark of the moon here. Hey, come on. You get back here with it. I'm walking along 42nd Street in the dark of the moon. Yeah. All of a sudden, I feel everything sliding apart. You know, people are falling down, hitting their heads on the woodwork and all that stuff. Well, the thing to do is to now to look. I could give you some techniques tonight. I don't want to make you self-conscious. I don't want you to suddenly feel that there's big chunks of lard growing all over you, you know, and you're beginning to leave little puddles of water as you walk. Stand up. Come on. Pull in your elbows. When you walk, walk. When you walk across the stage, you're walking across the stage. I mean, walk. Stand up. That's it. I mean, all the world's... What is it? All the world is a what? And all the people are what? What do they say? All the world's a... Are you a star? Or are you just a little rotten spear carrier who got cut off by the flies that came down, you know? You didn't even make it as the spear carrier. Yes, indeed, Emo. Or are you a magnanimous majestic stage director in the great play of life, standing back there shouting out the cues and controlling the lights. Yes, sir, that's my baby. Oh, yes, we have here a note for The Counterfeit Trader. It's a movie showing here in town with William Holden, and it's about spies. And I've read all the reviews, and they say it's a good picture. One thing I will tell you about spy pictures, they will always have a universal appeal. Because, you know, there's a secret thing within every one of us that is a spy. There is inside of each one of us a peeping Tom. Now, come on, stand up, Al. Inside of each one of us, there is a peeping Tom. You're not listening to me. Listen, dare you deny it? Dare you deny that when you were a kid, you wanted to have the thing that they sold in the back of the magazine for 10 cents that would enable you to have X-ray vision? And then when you got it, it didn't do anything? It doesn't work. Of course it didn't work. It never works. Nothing works. Least of all, you sitting out there scratching. I'm sweating here, grinding it out. You know, we got this picture called The Counterfeit Trader. And I think you ought to see it at the DeMille Theater, 47th Street and 7th Avenue. Old friendly, crinkly-eyed Bill Holden, looking right out there at you. Okay? Now, you know, I'll tell you, though, about that peeping Tom thing. It's in everybody. Everybody secretly wants to secretly look under every secret door, through every secret passageway, through every secret darkened window in the world. No question about it. You know, I know a guy who lives over here on the river, over here on the East River, a very famous TV producer, incidentally. And he has this gigantic 6,000-power telescope mounted in his living room, and he's got a great hobby. He looks at stars. But not the kind of stars you think, you know. And boy, he sure levels. And you know what he does? He keeps a score. You see, he lives in the neighborhood where people move in and out all the time. You know, they're going to Hollywood, they're going every place. And he keeps a score on the various stars that he has tracked. You know, like a bird watcher. He identifies them, both in their summer and winter plumage, and often in the molting season, which is the best season of all, actually, for a real bird lover. Speaking of birds. Oh, no. Oh, it's up to my blooming knickers. Oh. Hi, George, where's that paddle? I knew we shouldn't have come up this creek. I lost my paddle. Hold it there. What a great piece to go over the cliff by. All of us marching like lemmings. Yeah, you know. Are you still alive out there? That's a leading question. It can be very controversial. Oh, yes. Yeah. Do you ever have a feeling that you're... Well, there's a great phrase, GI phrase. It ends in off. Yeah. Well, that's what happens. I think that's what all of us are now. Or are doing. It's the truth, you know. The world is getting pretty interesting in a lot of ways. I began to have inklings of this when I was a kid, you know. It's a funny thing about that. Some people believe it. Now, that's one of the most interesting parts of our world, is that a lot of people believe in this. You know, you got to understand that. A lot of people believe that stocks and bonds are important. A lot of people believe that promoting the newest big musical is important. A lot of people believe, they really do, they seriously believe that a new polystyrene impact-proof coffin with 7 fascinating color-fast shades is important. Guaranteed and approved by the Good Housekeeping Institute. No, really, there are people that believe in this. So a lot of people really do believe that, let's say, the new dynamic 8-cylinder, 400 horsepower automobile is beautiful. No, you can't argue it. They do believe this. A lot of people really do believe that Westerns on television are great. And really, I'm sorry, they do, you know. So, I mean, and this is not said out of a spirit of snobism, or let's say, what is it? One of the most interesting aspects of our time, too, by the way, is the taste snobism. A fascinating thing, you know, where one person will match his taste against another and feel that he is better because he likes adult westerns with Burl Ives in them, as opposed to the westerns with, let's say, Hopalong Cassidy in them. You know, it's like measuring the Reader's Digest version of Albert Camus against, let's say, the Saturday Evening Post serialization of Thomas Wolfe, as opposed to the movie version, which included Audrey Hepburn. Wonder what old Tom would have thought of that. You know? Wasn't it Anthony Perkins or somebody like that played Tom Wolfe on Broadway, or somebody, some little thin, sensitive type? I mean, who knows about that? Well, I'm this kid this time, you see. I'm going to tell you this thing. We began to have suspicions that banjo players don't always play the right tune, and that even if they are playing the right tune, it might not even be a banjo they're playing, and maybe playing the banjo isn't even what they're doing after all, in spite of the fact you can hear the tune and you can see the banjo. See, when I was this kid, I lived in the middle of a giant industrial complex where all the stuff that all the people in New York talk about are made. You know? You hear the advertisements for Esso, the dynamic new gasoline. Well, I live next door to an Esso cracking plant. You hear about Amazo cooking fat oil. Well, I live down the street from where they made it. You hear about the steel industry. Well, there was a blast furnace that blew its thing right through our coal bin every afternoon. Oh, boy. Came up through the chutes and everything. Our rugs just continually waved. Just from convect current, you know, chukum, 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 going like that. Everything jiggled wherever I lived. And you could smell it on all sides, you know. And it was just part of the world. Nobody thought about selling it. They only made it, you know. They're down there sweating it out. Have you ever seen a group of Mexican laborers cleaning out an unfired open hearth? Let me tell you, this is as close to Dante as you can get. And oh, yes, let me tell you what they do. You know, they might have 36 open hearths all in a row. You know what an open hearth is? It's kind of like a little stove, you know, really. It's an oven. It's actually what it is. And this oven is lined with block, a kind of ceramic. Well, the heat is so fantastic that the ceramic slowly disintegrates until finally it's no good. So on any given day, maybe out of 36 open hearths, there might be only 25 of them going, operating. Well, what are the rest of them doing? Well, they keep them heated, you see. They can't, because to turn off the heat and to completely shut them down is very expensive, because it takes them like 2 weeks to heat it up again. You know, oh, yes, it's a face, like an oven, only a big oven. So they turn the heat down a little bit, and they send a lot of guys into that place. Now, I'll tell you about those guys. Can you imagine a job like this? Listen to me now. So they put 15 guys, you know, and they give them gas masks, and they put big heavy clothing on them, and they put wooden shoes on, interestingly enough. Yeah, wooden things on the bottom, because if you have rubber, it melts. And if you have leather shoes, it just immediately burns up. So they put wooden shoes on the bottom, big, thick wooden soles. And they go in with air hammers. Now, this is like an oven. It's, you know, it's contained. It's like a cave. You imagine a cave with a little entranceway, and you go into this cave, but this is a cave that's hotter than hell. And I'm using it in the classical sense, hell. No profanity implied. Hot, 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 hot. It's heated with gas. Really hot. And so these guys go in there, and it's been turned down, say, to maybe 800 degrees, as opposed to its, yes, that's right, as opposed to its 2,000 degrees or whatever it is it normally is. And they run in there with their air hammers, and they bang away at the brick, and there's a great cloud of white powder that rises out of this thing and swirls in the heat like mad. And there's about five of them, and they're going, they bang away at this for about 3 minutes and turn around and run out. And then they lay on the ground. While another group of guys, three of them, go, and they keep this on all year in and all year out, year in and year out, year in and year out, year in. Right now, there's some guy banging away at the inside of an open hearth with an air hammer, wearing a gas mask. It's not really a gas mask. They wear a kind of a smoke mask. And when they come running out, their shoes are on fire. Yeah, they come running out, their shoes are burning, and they fall down flat. They are allowed no more than 3.5 minutes inside. Union rule. 3.5 minutes in hell. Out of every 5 or 10, something like that. And so they run back and forth, and I used to walk along, and I got my big mail sack on, and it's hot. Oh, boy, it's heating in. Oh, it's coming out. And I got my earmuffs on, because 30 seconds later, it's going to be 19 below zero when I go through that door. So I got my earmuffs on, and I got my corduroy cap on, and I got my corduroy jacket, and the steam is rising, and the smoke is swirling, and the brick dust is flying higher and higher, and I see these guys running in and out, and you know, it's fascinating to see those figures in that swirling dust, because they move, it's like a ballet, because they can't get into each other's way, you know, this is a team. And they have learned over the years how to stay out of each other's hose lines, you know, the lines from their air hammers. And they run back and forth, in and out. It's like a great football team working a T formation that, boy, means business. And if you stay in there about 3 seconds too long, they drag you out. And so they move fast. These guys never stop. And I'm walking past them, looking in, walking past, looking in. Oh, by the way, they're paid at laborer's rate, which is the lowest pay you can get in the mill. Yeah, what is the lowest pay? Well, at that time, it was $5.12 a day. Now it's a little more than that, but not much more, actually. Yes, and another thing, too, of course, has to be stated, that their life is a life which they don't even know they live, because they don't know any other life. So don't feel sorry for them. It's like feeling sorry for a fish, because he's a fish. But it's great to watch them, you know, moving back and forth, in and out, because these guys are really doing something. Smoke is swirling. So that's the kind of world it is out there, you know, on all sides. And you know, when you drive through that region, you can tell what area you're coming to and what area you're in by the smell. And I lived in a world that was just nothing but smells. The springtime smelled like kerosene. That's when they did it at Esso, you see. And you know what I associate with summer? The heat of summer, more than anything else? The smell of Ivory soap. And I'll tell you why. Because the Lever Brother plant was where the beach was, on the shore of the lake. And they had this great big white building, and on top of it was a sort of a big phony box of ivory soap flakes. And in the heat of summer, the whole lake would smell like soap flakes. And then they would throw industrial waste out there, and you'd come up, you'd swim underwater, and you'd come up, and there'd be bubbles coming out of your ears and lather running down into your eyes. You know, you feel like a continual Dial soap commercial when you're out there swimming in the lukewarm water. Well, one night, and I think one of the great things that all of us appreciate, I don't know why it is, there's a secret thing, I suppose it has to do with a psychological desire to return to our origins, physical origins. Everybody likes to sleep all curled up in the back seat of a moving car. I have never known anyone who didn't. And everyone digs this kind of moving, rocking sensation of something alive carrying you. You curl up in the back and you sleep. And I remember as a kid, I would always be curled up in the back with my kid brother curled up down in the bottom. And it's in a big Oldsmobile. And we would be driving to Chicago and driving back. Driving to Chicago and driving back is roughly like driving from here to, oh, I don't know, maybe Newark and back, or further, maybe down to Jersey City and way out someplace in Jersey and then back, maybe 20, 15, 30, 40 miles. But it was always bitter cold when we'd come back. Icy cold. And as you lay in the back seat, half asleep, and the car is moving, you can smell the smells of the refinery. Esso, Shell, Phillips 66. You know, they don't use the phrase 66 anymore. You know what the 66 referred to, don't you, Ed? It was octane. And you could smell all that. You know, I'll tell you, you can get just a little indication of it when you drive out along the Jersey Turnpike and you go through that strange fairyland over there, you know? When you look out and you could see all those oil tanks and stuff. Will you notice those things that are growing up out of the midst of those oil tanks? Those tall structures that have pipes all over them and are all lit up with lights. And in the Christmas season, they usually put green lights and red lights all over the... Well, that's a cracker. That's a still. Now, they take crude oil, which is the kind of oil that comes right out of the ground, and they distill it. They make it into gasoline. They make it into kerosene. They make it into benzene. They make it into paraffin, wax. And a lot of the people who lived in that area worked in this fantastic... The largest refinery in the world is there. Covers all of Whiting, Indiana. In fact, the high schools there are known by that name. There is a high school there. The Whiting, Indiana high school football team is known as the Oilers. That's how much oil has taken that town, which is right next to the steel town. And there is a high school football team there called, guess what? The Steelers. And so all along, you have all these things, this great complex. Well, one night... Oh, boy, this is a picture I will never forget. And it kind of gives you an insight into this wild, violent, overbalanced, mechanistic world. I'm driving home in the back seat, lying there all curled up. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning. And we're coming down through Whiting, Indiana. We come down through East Chicago, Indiana. This is the midst of the great refinery area. No steel mills here, but you can smell. The smell gets so strong sometimes you can hardly breathe, and even we would notice it. It would cloud up the windows on the car, just the smell alone. Sort of a yellow, purple, strange, rotten egg smell. It's like the worst, awful, decayed gasoline is the way it smells, a genuine refining smell. So it's about 1 o'clock in the morning, and as a kid, I used to always like to look out of the window and see all these stills. They look like big, strange towers with lights and fairy things all over them. And the great big tanks all out there in the darkness with searchlights on them. You know why they put searchlights on them, don't you? Okay, I suspected you would know. Well, transgressing or transcutting through all of this area, there were rivers. And the rivers were used, you see, because the rivers went right down to the lake. This was right on the lake shore. The rivers would carry the great oil boats and the oil tankers right up into the refinery. And there were all kinds of little iron bridges you would cross as you drove. Well, one night, we are driving home. Bitter cold night. I'm lying in the back seat of the car. My kid brother's lying in the back seat of the car down at the other end of the seat. I'm about 9, he's about 7, something like that. And I could hear my parents just, you know, that little hum of conversation going on there, just a little... That's another pleasing thing, you know. You just hear that conversation going on. Other people are awake, and the car is rolling along. And there's this great sense of security that comes from movement. Nobody loves movement more than an American. He feels secure in it, much more than he is secure in the static position or the non-moving position. And so we're riding along. I could smell those old refineries just rocking back in, and looking out through the top of the window, you can see the tops of the stills, because they stretch into the air maybe 7, 8, 10 stories. They're high, thin structures. We were going over a bridge, and the bridge is right in the middle of the refinery. The refinery is on each side of the road, and the refinery has running alongside of it a chicken wire fence, high. Danger, stay out. It's a very dangerous area, always was. They want nobody in there who doesn't belong. We're driving right through it, right over the bridge. And the bridge and the river there all sort of mold into one thing. The rivers are so filled with oil and crud and industrial waste that it's not water any longer. It's kind of like a thick, viscous, black-blue tar that just flows just eddyingly. And once in a while, you can see a cigar butt floating or a tin can or something, but it's very thick and oily. Doesn't really move like water. There's an old oar boat, or maybe an old oil tanker laying up there against the wharf. It's a little thin river. It's only maybe 70 or 80 feet across. And we're driving right on the top of the bridge when suddenly, boom, just like that. And the windows of the car just shoom in. And we, shoo, boy, the car stopped. And, of course, the kids are up like that. What happened? And off to our left, one of the stills has blown up just as we are passing it. and it was like a gigantic, enormous, unimaginable Roman candle. Zoom! Straight up into the air, it was going. Big puffs of bloom, bloom, repeated, multiple, just it kept exploding like that. And the old man threw the car into first again, and he drove off that bridge like a madman and pulled off to the side, and we hadn't even stopped rolling when already the whistles were blowing. And it was maybe 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. Remember, black, Stygian black. Nothing but those lights all around us. And the whistle started to go. And I don't know whether you've ever heard the whistle, a disaster sound, in the middle of an industrial complex, calling all the workers from everywhere to come and help. It goes whoop, whoop, whoop. That means it is an all-out disaster. They just keep blowing it. Whoop. And it seemed like almost immediately the whole street was filled with people, millions of people, ladies wearing long nightgowns, kids crying, old men carrying pickaxes and things, because they knew someone had been killed. The still had blown up. They knew it. And the men working on the still were there. And everyone stood in long lines along those strange chicken wire fences, and guys were trying to get in. You can't get in, you know, because it kept billowing smoke and flame. And the poor old Oldsmobile sat there with broken windows, just pushed in. And, of course, the kids are wild. We didn't know what was going on. The old man was a great disaster fan. He was out and gone and cheering already. I mean, this is something he'd always probably secretly hoped for, to see this in action. And the people were swirling up and down the streets, and the fire engines were coming. And then I can recall just my mother saying, "Stay in the car now, don't go out." And you could see that great line of fire slowly moving up the river. The river started to smolder, just begin to burn. The rivers burn out there. Have you ever seen a river burning? When the fire begins to catch that thick scum of smoke and oil, until finally the whole river was burning as far as you could see. Way off into the distance, the river is burning, and great clouds of smoke, and it's the kind of fire that you cannot believe. It's the kind of fire where you can see 300 or 400 feet up in the air, the great cloud of black smoke, and suddenly, way up in the air, there is a bright tongue of yellow-red flame. Boom! It just rolls. It's as though the fire has rolled up in big packages and exploded 300, 400, 500 feet in the air. And then that night, we drove back, and you could see in the distance, you could see that smoke going. The old man got out of there because they closed the street off and everyone had to move. And we drove in, and he had to go to work in the morning. We got back, and you could see it out of the kitchen window. We sat in the kitchen window and watched it for maybe 2 or 3 hours until finally the smoke died down and everyone went back to home. And it was a wild night. And it was always talked about as the night the still blew up. We were right there. And when you see this, when you are there, you begin to experience some of the feelings about the industrial civilization. You wonder what place, what part, where is the position of people in all of it? Oh yes, how many were killed? There were 7. And that was considered very lucky that night. 7 people. It was a very, very lucky night. But I can always remember the feeling of the cab, the car. I remember the feeling of the back seat and the strange sense of totally unrelated security, being rocked to sleep. And then suddenly, boom, in came the windows, and it all started. That's my baby. Yes, sir. Don't mean me. Yeah. Come on now. It's in the knees first. Hold it there. Oh, boy. Oh. You know, if you, Well, if you watch it carefully enough, you'll see it. You know, it's you got to keep a hold of the string. It's like the time I'm walking through Ibadan. It's really an endemic thing. The desire to escape is not a Western, nor is it particularly a product of civilization. Everybody somehow feels that somewhere there is an Oz, that someplace there is an Emerald City. There is a thing or a person that will solve it all. If you could get the right thing, or if you could meet the right person, or if you could read the right story, or get a hold of the right book, it's all going to straighten out. And so we create movies, and we create all these time killers, and these a kind of a mental Novocaine, you know, that keeps it pretending that any minute now it's going to happen. Well, I'm going through Ibadan. Ibadan is a gigantic native city right in the middle of Nigeria. And it looks like, if you can imagine, a whole series of little, as if somebody had taken a deck of cards and just thrown them from millions of miles away, and the cards were just sort of all spread out, and they were made out of corrugated tin, and the sun is hitting down. Oh, it's a fantastic sun. Thousands of little places made out of dirt and mud and a kind of an adobe that must be 10 million years old. And I'm walking through this town. Get this. Listen to this. It's a wild moment. And you could see all the people with their magnificent robes all walking all over, you see. And you say, now these people, you know, there's something really alive and vital here. It's moving, and they know where they are, and they're living. Whether it's true or not, it seems that way to you. And people are laughing and selling fish and pots and pans and washboards and clothespins and everything, and it's all going on there, and the people are moving and walking. Suddenly, unbelievable. Rising out of the mess of these native huts that stretch for millions of miles on either side was a long, thin string. And at the end of the string was a tiny yellow kite just hanging there. Some guy was getting away. Some kid. Some guy, somebody. And that old kite tail flopped in the breeze just like a kite flopping in the breeze over Hammond, Indiana, over Prospect Park, over a park in London. The same kite, the same wind, the same dream.